but that this isn't the 19th century. As a doubly sponsored Brahmin in the regard of Baptists, the objects of July 29, 1878, stand out and proclaim themselves so that nothing but disregard of the intensity of monomania can account for their reception by the system. Or the total eclipse of July 29, 1878, and the reports by Professor Watson, from Rawlins, Wyoming, and by Professor Swift, from Denver, Colorado, that they had seen two shining objects at a considerable distance from the sun. It's quite in accord with our general expression, not that there is an intramercurial planet, but that there are different bodies, many vast things, near this earth sometimes, near the sun sometimes, orbitless worlds, which, because of scarcely any data of collisions, we think of as under navigable control or dirigible superconstructions. Professor Watson and Professor Swift published their observations. Then the disregard that we cannot think of in terms of ordinary, sane exclusions. The textbook systematists begin by telling us that the trouble with these observations is that they disagree widely. There is considerable respectfulness, especially for Professor Swift, but we are told that by coincidence these two astronomers, hundreds of miles apart, were eluded, their observations were so different. Professor Swift, Nature, September 19, 1878. That his own observation was in close approximation to that given by Professor Watson. In the observatory, 2:161, Swift says that his observations and Watson's were confirmatory of each other. The faithful try again. That Watson and Swift mistook stars for other bodies. In the observatory, 2:193, Professor Watson says that he had previously committed to memory all stars near the sun, down to the 7th magnitude. And he's damned anyway. How such exclusions work out is shown by Lockyer, Nature, August 20, 1878. He says, there is little doubt that an intramercurial planet has been discovered by Professor Watson. That was before excommunication was pronounced. He says, if it will fit one of Leverrier's orbits. It didn't fit. In Nature, 21:301, Professor Swift says, I have never made a more valid observation, nor one more free from doubt. He's damned anyway. We shall have some data that will not live up to most rigorous requirements, but, if anyone would like to read how carefully and minutely these two sets of observations were made, see Professor Swift's detailed description in the A.M. Jour. Sci. 116-313, and the technicalities of Professor Watson's observations in monthly notices, 38-525. Our own acceptance upon dirigible worlds, which is assuredly enough, more nearly real than attempted concepts of large planets relatively near this Earth, moving in orbits, but visible only occasionally, which more nearly approximates to reasonableness than does wholesale slaughter of Swift and Watson and Fritsch and Stark and de Kuyper's, but our own acceptance is so painful to so many minds that, in another of the charitable moments that we have now and then for the sake of contrast, we offer relief. The things seen high in the sky by Swift and Watson. Well, only 2 months before the horse and the barn. We go on with more observations by astronomers, recognizing that it is the very thing that has given them life, sustained them, held them together, that has crushed all but the quasi-gleam of independent life out of them. Were they not systematized, they could not be at all, except sporadically and without sustenance. They are systematized, they must not vary from the conditions of the system, they must not break away for themselves. The two great commandments. Thou shalt not break continuity. Thou shalt try. We go on with these disregarded data, some of which, many of which, are of the highest degree of acceptability. It is the system that pulls back its variations, as this earth is pulling back the Matterhorn. It is the system that nourishes and rewards, and also freezes out life with the chill of disregard. We do note that, before excommunication is pronounced, Orthodox journals do liberally enough record unassimilable observations. All things merge away into everything else. That is continuity. So the system merges away and evades us when we try to focus against it. We have complained a great deal. At least we are not so dull as to have the delusion that we know just exactly what it is that we are complaining about. We speak seemingly definitely enough of the system, but we're building upon observations by members of that very system. Or what we are doing, gathering up the loose heresies of the orthodox. Of course the system fringes and ravels away, having no real outline. A Swift will antagonize the system, and a Lockyer will call him back, but, then, a Lockyer will vary with a meteoric hypothesis, and a Swift will, in turn, represent the system. This state is to us typical of all intermediatist phenomena, or that not conceivably is anything really anything, if its parts are likely to be their own opposites at any time. We speak of astronomers as if there were real astronomers but who have lost their identity in a system as if it were a real system but behind that system is plainly a rapport, or loss of identity in the spirit of an era. Bodies that have looked like dark bodies, and lights that may have been sunlight reflected from interplanetary objects, masses, constructions. Lights that have been seen upon or near the moon. In Philosophical Transactions, 82-27, is Herschel's report upon many luminous points, which he saw upon or near the moon, during an eclipse. Why they should be luminous, whereas the moon itself was dark, would get us into a lot of trouble, except that later we shall, or we shan't, except that many times have luminous objects been seen close to this earth at night. But numerousness is a new factor, or new disturbance, to our explorations. A new aspect of interplanetary inhabitancy or occupancy. Worlds in hordes or beings, winged beings, perhaps wouldn't astonish me if we should end up by discovering angels or beings in machines, argosies of celestial voyagers. In 1783 and 1787, Herschel reported more lights on or near the moon, which he supposed were volcanic. The word of a Herschel has had no more weight, in divergences from the orthodox, than has had the word of a Lascarbault. These observations are of the disregarded. Bright spots seen on the moon, November, 1821, PROC London Roy. SOC, 2-167. For four other instances, see Loomis, Treatise on Astronomy, p. 174. A moving light is reported in Phil. Transaction, 84-429. To the writer, it looked like a star passing over the moon, which, on the next moment's consideration, I knew to be impossible. It was a fixed, steady light upon the dark part of the moon. I suppose fixed applies to luster. In the report of the Brit. Association, 1847-18, there is an observation by Rankin, upon luminous points seen on the shaded part of the moon, during an eclipse. They seemed to this observer like reflections of stars. That's not very reasonable, however, we have, in the Annual Register, 1821-687, a light not referable to a star because it moved with the moon, was seen three nights in succession, reported by Capt. Cater. Sequard. Jure. Roy. Inst. 12-133. Phil. Transaction, 112-237. Report from the Cape Town Observatory, a whitish spot on the dark part of the moon's limb. Three smaller lights were seen. The call of positiveness, in its aspects of singleness, or homogeneity, or oneness, or completeness. In Dayton now coming, I feel it myself. A Leverrier studies more than 20 observations. The inclination is irresistible to think that they all relate to one phenomenon. It is an expression of cosmic inclination. Most of the observations are so irreconcilable with any acceptance other than of orbitless, dirigible worlds that he shuts his eyes to more than two-thirds of them. He picks out six that can give him the illusion of completeness, or of all relating to one planet. Or let it be that we have data of many dark bodies, still do we incline almost irresistibly to think of one of them as the dark body in chief. Dark bodies, floating, or navigating, in interplanetary space, and I conceive of one that's the prince of dark bodies. Melanicus. Vast dark thing with the wings of a superbat, or jet black superconstruction, most likely one of the spores of the evil one. The Extraordinary Year, 1883. London Times, December 17, 1883. Extract from a letter by Hicks Pasha, that, in Egypt, September 24, 1883, he had seen, through glasses, an immense black spot upon the lower part of the sun. Sunspot, maybe. One night an astronomer was looking up at the sky, when something obscured a star, for 3.5 seconds. A meteor had been seen nearby, but its train had been only momentarily visible. Dr. Wolf was the astronomer, Nature, 86-528. The next datum is one of the most sensational we have, except that there is very little to it. A dark object that was seen by Professor Hayes, 411 degrees of arc, moving slowly across the Milky Way. Greg's Catalogue, Report British Association, 1867-426. One of our quasi reasons for accepting that orbitless worlds are dirigible is the almost complete absence of data of collisions. Of course, though in defiance of gravitation, they may, without direction like human direction, adjust to one another in the way of vortex rings of smoke, a very human-like way, that is. But in Knowledge, February, 1894, are two photographs of Brooks' comet that are shown as evidence of its seeming collision with a dark object, October, 1893. Our own wording is that it struck against something, Professor Barnard's is that it had entered some dense medium, which shattered it. For all I know, it had knocked against merely a field of ice. Melanicus.